back to RSM. We're going to go to America now and have a chat to Jesse Spector, a writer for Deadspin. And Jesse, it's been a crazy 24 hours if you follow American sports. Are you still catching your breath after the James Harden trade?
Yeah, especially it's exciting here. I'm in New York, so he's coming to Brooklyn, and the Knicks have been complete trash for many years now. I grew up a Knicks fan, so the Nets are the other team in town. I don't really have any bad feelings about them because they've never really been all that great. They went to the finals a couple times when they were back in New Jersey. Obviously with Jason Kidd, but James Harden, Kyrie Irving, assuming that he gets back on the court because he's been kind of AWOL, but kind of they've excused him. He hasn't been going to work, and I wrote a column about that the other day for Deadspin. Actually, yesterday. It feels like the days here are very long these days. James Harden coming to be with Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving. They're going for it.
They certainly are going for it. And I'll ask you about Kyrie Irving in just a second because I found that story you wrote very fascinating. And you made some points that I hadn't seen written anywhere else, which is always good as well. But your Knicks, they've started okay this season. They're 5-7. At least they're competitive. And it looks like they're finally doing the right things and putting some good young players in place instead of just standing by the phone and hoping a superstar free agent will land like they've done for the last 20 years.
Yeah, it's been fascinating. That was it was a funny thing this summer with this fall with the off season that the Knicks had. You wanted to see them actually do very little, and that was kind of a strange thing. If you were a Knicks fan, you were pretty much hoping that they wouldn't blow up their cap space and do something stupid because they're still a couple of years away from being good. You know, Obi Toppin looks pretty good. First-round draft pick they had, Emmanuel Quickly, their other first-round draft pick, looks pretty good. Julius Randle's been great. So we'll see at what point the Knicks actually get better, but losing is not the worst thing in the world for them right now. And they're 5-7, so they show pretty early they could be a good team. They've lost, you know, 3 or 4 games in a row now. They're not that good, but they're okay. And with Tom Thibodeau coaching them, they'll at least put an effort out there every night. So they're an interesting team to watch as we go forward.
They're probably the biggest sleeping giant in world sports, the New York Knicks. Hopefully we can see them back to their glory days that we all loved in the early to mid-90s where they were competing for titles every season and the Garden was rocking. But the big news was James Harden traded for effectively 8 first-round draft picks. Now, 4 of them are most likely going to be pick swaps, but a huge bargain if you do like getting your draft picks and stashing them away, which now Houston has the opportunity to do. But historically, we've seen with the NBA over the years, when these superstar trades are done, more often than not, it favors the team getting the superstar. Brooklyn, it's all about winning and winning right now. This could be the greatest offensive team ever if we can see Durant, Harden, and Kyrie Irving all on the floor at the same time. What's the reaction been like to the Harden trade, and what do you make of it?
Well, I think it's been expected to some extent that, you know, Harden was going to get traded. He was doing everything in his power to get booted out of Houston. You know, he was messing around at practice, and he was going, he would say he was not going to strip clubs. He was having strippers at a private event. There's a key distinction to be drawn there, I guess. Acting his way out of there, and the talk for a while was that he wanted to get to Brooklyn. To reunite with Durant, who he played with in Oklahoma City. So he finally got his way. It looked like the Philadelphia 76ers might be in the mix, but the asking price was too high. We know how the Sixers have felt over the years about their first-round picks. So not surprising that they wouldn't want to get involved in that way. It is a huge, huge gamble for the Nets because they got to get this done in the next couple of years before Irving and Durant and Harden are all free agents, but, you know, these opportunities don't come along all that often. You know, LeBron James doesn't just fall into your lap all the time, like if you're the Cleveland Cavaliers or, you know, there's more teams than there are superstars. So you've got to do it. And, Brooklyn and the city of New York are, we've got a lot going on right now, but it's for basketball, it's real exciting.
And hopefully we can see that trio out on the court together. And Kyrie Irving's the X factor in terms of the unknown element, because he's been MIA, missing in action. And you wrote a magnificent piece that I read yesterday suggesting that he's a unique character, and instead of needing discipline, he might just need a cuddle. We don't know what's going on inside of his head. Can you flesh out how you view the Kyrie Irving situation, him as a person, and what do you think Brooklyn will do to handle this situation?
Yeah, I mean, Kyrie Irving's he's an interesting guy, you know? Like, he's born in Australia, born in Melbourne when his dad was playing there. And yet, you know, then is an American, but had the flat earth comment, where he wasn't sure if the world is actually round. He goes out and gives, you know, lots of money to programs that are feeding people during coronavirus. He supported, financially supported WNBA players who opted out of last season, but then he comes back, and says that he's not talking to the media. And then he says, I don't talk to Pawn. He's a complicated guy. And I think that, you know, he got into this season, and he's talked before about battling with depression. And that's a tough thing. It's a tough thing. And this has been, I mean, living in the United States, but particularly in New York, and the trauma of last March, when in this city it was just constant sirens. You didn't stop hearing ambulances here. And life hasn't been normal for almost a year now. So I think everybody's kind of going through things right now. And I don't think that Kyrie Irving is any different just because he's a professional basketball player. One thing that he did that was wrong was, you know, if you need some time off to deal with some things mentally, you know, take a little personal break, mental health day, you tell your boss. And certainly Steve Nash is a guy who deserves that respect. He's a Hall of Fame player. He's a guy who was brought in as coach of the Nets because Kyrie Irving and Kevin Durant wanted him there. And then for Kyrie to not tell Steve Nash what he was up to, so that he kind of left Steve Nash out to dry, that's not a great thing. So the Nets are within their rights if they wanted to discipline him in some way, but that's ultimately not going to be the best thing for him and not going to be the best thing for them, because they need him as much as he needs them, and they need to find a way to make this work and to work together. Early regular season games don't mean that much, so if you got to take some time away, do it now. And there's talk that, you know, with the James Harden trade, that, hey, all of a sudden Kyrie Irving's very excited to play with him and get back to basketball. So maybe that was exactly what they needed to do.
What's the reaction been like to Kyrie? Are people angry at him? Has there been calls for him to be sacked or fined or sanctioned? Or are people now starting to turn around and think, well, hang on, maybe he needs support and maybe there is something a little bit wrong, unfortunately, at the moment?
And there is a lot of talk about, you know, the Nets needing to fine him. And I think that, you know, it's not unreasonable to say you're a basketball player, you're getting, you know, paid $400,000 per game, basically. If you're not showing up for the games, you shouldn't get that money. That is understandable. I don't think anybody's really saying that the Nets need to get rid of him, need to sack him, because people understand that, you know, there was some speculation that it could be, you know, the James Harden trade was something that was being talked about for quite a while. There was some talk that maybe it would just be a straight up Kyrie Irving for James Harden deal, and, you know, take two people who didn't seem to want to be where they were and move them around and see how that worked. But they're really, it's just more been kind of a situation of, wow, that's a thing that's happening right now, rather than the kind of really, there's been some reaction to it, but it hasn't been dominating the focus of the media really so much, because there's just so much chaos in the United States right now that it's been tough for stories like that to really get the same kind of traction they might ordinarily.
Yeah, Jesse, in terms of that, you talk about the chaos in the United States at the moment, and the Boston Celtics have had a really difficult time with a number of players testing positive and games being postponed. Are they getting closer to returning to court?
They are. The NBA did at least build some flexibility into the second half of its schedule for this season. So, you know, what we're seeing with the Celtics, what we're seeing with the Philadelphia 76ers, who have been going out there and playing with a depleted roster, the Miami Heat have been having trouble getting enough guys on the court to actually play their games. This is something that's going to continue, especially because these teams play each other, and the NBA did introduce some new guidelines like no hugging and, you know, and stuff like that. But it does kind of defeat the purpose when you're playing a game where, you're out there for 48 minutes on the court, breathing on each other the whole time, sweating on each other, and all of that, and you're not in the bubble anymore. The NBA had such great success with the bubble in the summer. Nobody tested positive. They went in there, they ran it, and they pulled it off. And now they've gone back out into the wider world. And, you know, the pandemic is worse now in America than it was over the summer. Hopefully with the vaccine, you know, things will start to turn around soon. But things, and it's taken a backseat even because of the political upheaval here in the last week. But cases and deaths are as high as they've ever been. So it still is a situation where the NBA is not out of the woods on this, and they're just really trying to get through to the spring when they can really have a better feeling about getting through things and being able to fill out their schedule. But there's the thing that I just wrote for today that just went up on Deadspin is the University of Virginia women's basketball team just canceled the rest of their season, and they're the second team in their conference to do that following Duke, and who knows if the rest of those teams are going to be able to finish their season.
Jesse, you sound quite depressed, and rightfully so, about the state of events in America right now. Obviously, the pandemic is just absolutely horrible, and there's lots of unrest politically and a lot of hate at the moment, I think is probably the best way to say it. How big a part is sports playing in uniting people and distracting people in times of adversity?
I don't know how much sports are uniting people right now. And we even have, you know, distracting, maybe. It is nice to be able to get through the NFL playoffs. And, you know, we had, there's extra NFL playoffs this year because they expanded the playoff field. So last weekend was nice to just sort of immerse ourselves in football on Saturday and Sunday. But as far as uniting, the division is there too. And you see it where John Calipari, who used to coach in the NBA and now coaches the University of Kentucky, the Kentucky players took a knee before the national anthem at their game last night, and Calipari took a knee with them and then came out after the game and said that he wasn't sure that was the right thing to do. Even though he did, he wasn't sure that was the right time and place for it. And he winds up getting criticism from both sides of the issue. And it's just, there's the divisiveness that is happening in our country right now is not just outside of sports. It is very much in sports as well. There's no sticking to sports, as it were. Sports is part of our society, and it's touched by politics as well.
How much hope are you clinging to that a change of presidency could lead to the two parties coming closer together?
I am hopeful about that. I think that the Republican Party, you know, as much as anything, if they want to move forward, because they're a lot of the unity talk right now is coming from the Republican Party, and a lot of it is, please forget all of the things that have happened here and that Donald Trump has done, and
what really needs to happen is some accountability for the mishandling of a pandemic, for just, you know, for fomenting an insurrection at our capital. Responsibility and accountability need to happen before, and that's an important step before unity. And I think that, you know, Joe Biden is good at that. He is good at consensus building and reaching across the aisle. But a lot of people are just going to see this as, you know, if you take the steps towards, you know, saying that we're going to be doing unity without doing accountability, that doesn't really do a whole lot. And, you know, I think that you've seen that over the years, that when people aren't held accountable for their actions, they will repeat those actions. And that's really a lot of the story of Donald Trump's life. How many times, you know, even in the last 4 years, has he done things that no other president ever could have gotten away with and not been held to account for it, and just continue to do the same things?
Jesse, have we, with Donald Trump in regard to that, we've already seen a couple of golf clubs have actually taken away, mm-hmm. sorry, a couple of golf tournaments have taken away events from, you know, Trump-owned golf courses. Do you think that's going to happen more into the future? And also on the bigger scale, the pandemic's going to change sport. It's changed life across the world. How much is it going to change sport in the US as well, do you think?
It's hard to say how much it's going to change sport in the long term. I think that there will be some changes, and this is something that I went, you know, I wrote about, feels like years ago, but it's months ago, where what is the access for the media going to look like? I don't know that we're going to see it where reporters are just milling about through the locker room. I don't know what fan access is going to look like. Are people going to go back to the same extent that they were? Are these teams going to have trouble filling up their stadiums and arenas? I don't know. How are they going to handle health issues? There's a lot of open questions and a lot that we really can't even begin to answer until we're on the other side of the crisis that is still very much raging. The questions about the future kind of have to be pushed back until we deal with the very, very big challenges of the present. As far as Donald Trump and golf courses, there's another golf course here in New York that's called Trump Links. And you can see it when you drive over the Whitestone Bridge from Queens to the Bronx, big sign, and the city is talking about taking his name off of that and ending its contract with him to run that golf course. I think that in the past week and with what happened and, you know, him getting impeached yesterday for inciting an insurrection, honestly, the Trump brand has become toxic, which is the exact opposite of why, I mean, a lot of people think that he ran for president not really wanting to be president in the first place, that he just wanted to get his name out there more and to be able to do more with his name on businesses and prop up his family's name on businesses. And, you know, here in the last week, really the exact opposite has happened, that nobody in the business world wants to be involved with him at all.
Jesse, we really appreciate you having a chat to us today. Before we wrap up, the NHL season just commenced, and unfortunately, COVID already very prominent. 36 players already on COVID protocol. We've had the 17 from Dallas test positive, and then another 19 players, unfortunately, have erred on the wrong side of either testing or been in contact with someone who's tested positive. How optimistic or pessimistic are you about the hockey season?
I'm pessimistic that there's going to be a lot more COVID spreading through the league. I think, you know, we saw it in March how quickly, and we've seen it in the college hockey season too, how quickly coronavirus can spread and in public rinks as well. A lot of public rinks, like in New England, have closed because you get one person, and the way that, you know, breathing in a cold, wet atmosphere that you have when you have an ice rink, it spreads like mad. And we've seen, you know, there's been mumps outbreaks in the NHL multiple times in the last decade. You might remember there's a picture of Sidney Crosby with his throat the size of a basketball. It's not an environment where you're going to be able to keep an outbreak from happening. So they were able to get it right when they went into the bubbles in Toronto and Edmonton and made it work. I do think that having an all-Canadian division that they're going to have this year is going to allow them to proceed. You see that the Canadian teams really don't have the same issues that teams in the United States have, like the Dallas Stars, who were just in the Stanley Cup final. Now this is how they start their season. The geographic breakdowns that they have are a good idea, but it's so far-flung in some of the divisions. I mean, the Central Division goes from Tampa Bay to Chicago. That's a long way and a lot of travel. It's not like, you know, where you have New York, New Jersey, Philadelphia all playing each other all the time in Pittsburgh, and it's all just kind of in a closed circuit part of the country. It's going to be a big challenge for them to pull this off, and I don't think that it's going to go off without a hitch, but I do think that, you know, what really matters for the NHL is getting to the Stanley Cup playoffs, and by the time that you get to May, June, we should be able to get through that, and that's the hockey that people really care about more than anything else.
Jesse, we really appreciate you having a chat to us today. Thanks for shedding some light on everything that's going on in the country at the moment. Unfortunately, not a lot of it good, but hopefully things can improve heading into 2021.
Thank you so much, and look forward to being able to visit you guys someday.